Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good evening, wherever you are listening to us on Blog Talk Radio. This is Rated LGBT Radio, and I am Rob Watson. And tonight, the show is one of our streamlined shows. It is going to be my co-host, Brody Levesque, and myself. We are going to be talking about a couple of different subjects, one of which is how the Education Department under Betsy DeVos is opening a new investigation. Apparently, there has been an incident in Georgia that they are investigating, and I'm doing air quotes around investigating, because what is actually happening is they are trying to capitalize on a situation that I believe, if I'm reading the facts right, has actually nothing to do with transgender kids, but trying to make it about transgender kids and trying to make it be a situation that indicates that the transgender bathroom initiative to allow transgender kids a safe space is somehow creating a hostile environment. And we're going to get into that. We're also going to talk about the FBI report on Brett Kavanaugh and the reaction to it, and Brody will provide behind the scenes input and observations that you won't be hearing anywhere else. So that's an exclusive take on that. We're going to talk about the religious rights meddling and cheering in the background over a hardship they are putting on the spouses and loved ones of diplomats coming to the U.S. who are LGBT. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about one of my favorite singers, who is now, because of a stance she took that is anti-transgender, I'm going to take her off my favorite singers list. And I'll tell you a little bit more about in a few minutes as well. But first, without further ado, I want to welcome on Brody. Welcome. Good evening.
Good evening, Rob, and good evening to our listeners. How are you?
I'm okay. The news has got me tensive and irritated and a little bit fuming in different places, but other than that, good.
Well,
right?
I think you've had quite a few days.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The tension and the level of anger and momentum in the United States, particularly on Capitol Hill, as we've moved through this process with the Kavanaugh investigation and the Kavanaugh hearings, has just been incredible. It's been a very long time, I think, since myself or any other journalist has actually seen this rise of anger and people being that upset. And it's... Yeah, this is a real bunch of unhappy folk out there, and in many cases for good reason, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But, yeah, this has been another week of nonstop fun, starting with the hearing that we talked about last Thursday, moving all the way through the weekend. It's been kind of surreal. I'm going to start off with the Georgia case that you mentioned. The Department of Education announced this week, and I'm quoting from my good friend Zach Ford at Think Progress, that it's going to investigate a complaint that a Georgia elementary school's transgender inclusive policy is somehow responsible for the alleged sexual assault of a five-year-old. Now, the complaint appears to be just the latest attempt by the Alliance Defending Freedom, or the ADF as we call them, which is a vehemently anti-LGBT group, hate group, to undermine transgender non-discrimination protections in schools. Now, according to the ADF's complaint, sometime last November, we're talking a year ago, Poska Thomas's five-year-old daughter was using a restroom at Oakhurst Elementary School in Decatur, Georgia. And the complaint alleges that one of her classmates pushed her against the toilet door stall and forcibly touched her genitals. Now, the complaint, which was filed in May of this year, describes the classmate as, quote, a boy known to the school administration to identify as gender fluid, end quote. The attack, the complaint asserts, was a foreseeable result of Decatur School's policy respecting students according to their gender identity. Zach continues by saying that ADF alleged that the school dismissed Thomas's complaint and even reported her to the Department of Family and Child Services as the actual person or perpetrator of the assault on her daughter. ADF is also claiming that this demonstrates how the school's gender identity non-discrimination policy creates an unsafe and hostile environment. And the problem with this, and as Zach pointed out, in many ways, when you get into school districts and policies where you have a situation where these policies are in effect, and then you end up with situations, especially with ADF and some of the Christian right types, they get really, bent. The ADF is known to go grab these cases and stir up trouble where there may not have been one before. They conflate facts. They stretch the truth considerably, almost to the breaking point. And it's all done to undermine the legitimacy of the transgender students. And the unfortunate byproduct of this is that now school districts who are weary of any kind of litigation anyway are starting to pull back on that. Now, the other part about
I really want to focus on one piece, and this is just underscoring what you just said. In this particular case especially, what they are trying to pump a lie is an absolute falsehood. Here is, from the same article, here is the Oakhurst principal's email to parents that was sent out about this. Quote, it has come to my attention that a rumor is circulating regarding an alleged incident at Oakhurst Elementary. The rumor purports that one student assaulted another student in a restroom this fall. Although an incident was alleged, a thorough investigation involving Oakhurst administration, central office staff, law enforcement, and social service agencies led us to confidently determine that the allegation was unfounded. I can imagine how alarming such a rumor would be to anyone who might have heard it, and for those of you hearing this now for the first time. I can assure you we have a strong plan in place that keeps our student safety as our top priority. If you have ever any questions or concerns, please contact me directly. But then there's an added note from the reporter. Furthermore, there doesn't appear to be any evidence that the student alleged to have been part of this incident even identifies as quote-unquote gender fluid, as the complaint asserts. Decatur reports that district officials have said that the student accused of the assault is male and does not identify as transgender or gender fluid. So I'm going to extrapolate from that and assume that a boy came into the girls' restroom and had some sort of interaction with the child that is in question. And where this leap to the transgender restrooms is because their whole premise is the policy means that any boy could come in and claim to be transgender, they are trying to twist this and use this to imply that that is what happened in this case, when in fact it did not. So anyway, just my two cents, Brody. Keep going.
No, but I mean, here's what you end up with is that you have, you know, groups of these parents and, you know, I'm going to go ahead and pin the tail on the donkey. The vast majority of these parents that bring these complaints, or in this case, this complaint or some of these lawsuits, are normally, you know, members of the Christian right. They belong to churches. They belong to Christian right organizations. They're followers of Focus on the Family, you know, the American Family Association. And what you end up happening here is the polarity as such with these people, you know, they're completely unreasonable. They have a set agenda. They have, you know, the Alliance Defending Freedom, Liberty Council, and Thomas More Center in Detroit. Those are the three largest of the anti-gay law firms that specifically target trans people or gay people or lesbian people. Zach pointed out in his piece that about a year ago, a group of anonymous parents who were calling themselves the Concerned Parents had started a Change.org petition. And this was for this particular school district, Decatur City Schools, claiming that new guidelines reflecting school policies that had been in place, get this, for over a decade, were, quote, crafted in the dark without input from or accountability to us as parents. And then it goes on from there. You see, here's the thing. And I say this not really not unkindly so much as just with absolute, you know, being exasperated with all of this. These people are just at the point where, you know, someone's going to have to draw the line in the sand and tell them that they quite frankly need to butt out. And unfortunately, in a case like this or in other cases, because these people are so litigious, it's going to have to be federal courts that do it. You're never going to get Republican lawmakers, particularly if you look at the state of Texas, for example, or any of some of the other red states, to enact any kind of common sense policies. I mean, and it's been my, you know, discovery as a journalist that a lot of these people that bring these, you know, complaints like this particular one against transgender people are the same people that, you know, think that Noah built an ark and there was a huge flood and we had two animals on there. And, oh, by the way, the dinosaurs were on there too, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's become to the point where this smaller vocal minority has got such control. But at the end of the day, you know, virtually every professional I've talked to has said the same thing. It's gotten to the point with these people that it's not really too far off base. They're mentally ill. Okay. They're living in a fantasy world. And that's basically it. You know, I've told you before, and, you know, and we've been friends for over a decade now, that I really don't have a problem with religion as long as they kind of keep it to themselves. That's how I used to feel. I now feel that I have a serious problem with religion because it's an illness. And that illness, unfortunately, has a complete negative impact, you know, on situations like this one in Decatur, Georgia. And I hear the attacks on the trans community constantly, and quite frankly, Rob, you know, and I'll throw my press credentials to one side here for a moment, just as an ally and as a member of the LGBTQI community, you know, I'm done with it. You know, I don't care you don't like trans people. I don't care that you don't like gay people. I don't care that you believe in your Bronze Age mythology that was written by a bunch of goat-screwing sheep herders in a, you know, sect tribe, okay, in the middle of a rock, you know, water-starved desert. You know, I don't care. What I do care about is that you all keep impugning the civil liberties and the human rights, more importantly, the human rights of other people, predicated on mythology. And I hope every Christian out there gets mad at me right now. And you know why? It's because it's time somebody took you guys and held you into account. You people cause more misery on the face of this planet than anybody else does. And this case in Decatur, Georgia, really is seriously, Rob, it's got me angry. This is, you know.
Well, it has me angry too. I see it as slightly different than you do in terms of the cause. I see it as out and out bigotry and ignorance and prejudice. And I agree with you that the people who are holding the shield are doing it under this banner of their righteous Christian quote, and I'm majorly air quoting Christian,
yeah,
quote unquote values. But that's basically bullshit. And I mean, it's bullshit in that It's really this big, huge group of bigots. Because, first of all, there is where they had the thinnest line of a few quotes that they could use against gay people. There's even limited, fewer lines, like maybe two in the entire Bible that they can actually use against transgender. And those same quotes that they could use against transgender could be easily applied to women just wearing pantsuits. I mean, it's like there, it is not this, you know, legacy concept that they're standing behind. They are pulling, they are creating their religion out of their own hatred and their own bigotry. My fear is that the person who is in that throng and who has sway in this is the head of the Department of Education herself. So
oh, yes.
That's what
wow.
bothers me most about this. But
there's the meat of
I would
it right
also
there.
Point
that's
out, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But I would also point out, and this is the other story that I was alluding to, there are other zealots that have nothing to do with religion that are in this exact same camp. And that got incredibly personal for me because one of them happens to be this singer-artist that I have loved for years and respected and everything else, and that's Alison Moyet. And
mm-hmm.
an article just came out in Pink News where Alison Moyet joins the anti-trans activists in a letter attacking the charity Stonewall. And this letter was attacking Stonewall because Stonewall, which was originally lesbian, gay, and bisexually oriented, has worked to broaden their umbrella for trans rights. And a bunch of feminist extremists who are anti-trans are absolutely opposed to this, and Alison Moyet has now lent her voice to that exact same thing. And they are as bad
mm-hmm.
as the Christo fascists that you're talking about.
Yes.
They,
yeah.
again, have folded under some philosophy that on its front sounds admirable and folded in their own bias, their own fears, their own hatreds and everything else and come out with this anti-trans stand. And I'm not only mortified at it from the sense of equality, but I'm also mortified on it in just the sense of human rights. This derogatory stance that they are taking and this attempt to pull people down and to denigrate them is deadly. This causes depression and suicide and physical attacks. I mean, this is the same philosophy that causes transgender women to be murdered. I mean, it all comes from this same bucket, and it's got to stop. And, you know, whatever banner people pick up to try to wave to make their hatred and their transphobia and their prejudice sound legitimate, that's not okay across the board. Whether it's feminism or Christianity, it's all bullshit. So that's my two cents.
No, it is. And I think that another part of the problem, and you just illustrated it, and I happen to be very well acquainted with Stonewall UK. I've had the pleasure of dealing with that organization now for well over a decade. And it's true. For a very long time, the charity scheme only did focus in on lesbian, gay, and bisexual individuals. And as of recent, they have broadened the scope of their mission to be very inclusive of the trans community. And I think the other part of it is that, you know, things are happening in especially the United Kingdom, where I think that people have been taking, unfortunately, some cues from their American counterparts. We know that one of the Christian charities in the UK does that. You know, Stonewall has been working towards broadening trans equality since it was announced that the British Parliament and the British government were going to do a reform of what's called the Gender Recognition Act. They did that about a year ago. And unfortunately, as they're working through this process, all of these trans-exclusionary radical feminists, or the TERFs as they're known, who are hugely anti-trans, people like your singer friend and some of these others have just gotten themselves in a place where, you know, they're just leveling, you know, accusations that are just, they're incredible. Filmmaker and writer and an acquaintance of mine, Dustin Lance Black, tweeted much earlier today, and he took a shot at the Times of London, which is one of what we call the Fleet Street papers. In other words, it's like the British equivalent to the New York Times or the Washington Post. And Lance said, and I'm quoting Lance, "I'm appalled at the Times for promoting a transphobic petition targeting Stonewall UK. The trans community has always fought alongside me and our LGB family. We must have their backs. Acceptance without exception for trans people." You know, and I agree with Lance. I think that's really the point that we've got to get in a broader sense, especially back here in the United States. If you look at some of the things happening, like, for example, with this case that you mentioned in the United Kingdom, a lot of that is being touched off by the literal export, if you will, of this animus and hatred of the LGBTQI community by these American activists like Brian Brown and Tony Perkins and Focus on the Family. I mean, they have literally taken, you know, their animus and their ignorance and their hatred and their appalling, you know, descriptions of their fellow human beings and citizens, and now they're planting these things as seeds of ideas in these countries over there, including the United Kingdom. I've spoken to folks at Stonewall UK, and to a person, everyone that I've spoken to within that organization has told me that many of the homegrown anti-LGBTQ types are taking notes directly out of the playbooks of the Americans, which we can segue right away into something you mentioned at the top of the hour. As you know, the Trump administration, through Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, announced that they were no longer going to issue diplomatic visas to personnel for the diplomatic missions of the United Nations in New York, and we're thinking that that will probably also hold true to the diplomatic missions and consulates across the United States and in Washington for same-sex couples if they cannot show that they're, you know, married.
Right.
It used to be one of those situations where it, you know, especially under Secretary of State Clinton, you know, exceptions were made and visas were issued and it wasn't that big of a deal, particularly for the missions at the U.N. But with this particular administration and its just absolute, you know, unbridled hatred and animus towards the LGBTQI community, this was just yet another in a series of steps. And this goes, and I'm going to say this, this goes beyond rolling back the Obama administration's initiatives. This is animus and hate.
Right.
This is different.
Right.
Go ahead.
A couple of points there on that. One is that it kind of harkens back to limitations that propelled same-sex marriage forward in the courts in the United States, in that it was like, okay, everything is equal and you have to be married, but gay people can't get married. Oh, well, you know, and I mean, because to be fair, and I'm only giving them a little bit of leeway on this, in that this requirement for marriage also applies to heterosexual people. So a heterosexual diplomat whose partner is not married to them also would not have that benefit extended, you know, even if they were domestic partners, et cetera, et cetera. The one upside I would say to this, where it could backfire on them, is this could give a point going back to these countries if they are getting close to the legalization of same-sex marriage to be another point on why that needs to be extended in their own countries. So, you know, this could have a long-term positive effect, if you will, because it does score the point on why quality is needed. But I won't take away from your point that the motivation behind this, and especially the people who are cheering it on, is pure animus.
It's animus. I mean, at the end of the day, while to your point, that's kind of a nice idea, the ugly reality is that by the American State Department doing this, it puts lives at risk. Literally.
Yeah. No, I agree. Because
it codifies.
There are plenty of countries. Yeah. There are plenty of countries where they are not close to marriage equality. They are, in fact, on LGBTQ persecution.
Exactly. And it really doesn't help in the overarching, you know, look at it to have this sort of thing happen. But then again, the argument could be said, and fairly, that the United States has completely abrogated its position and responsibilities in terms of leadership, not only just for Western civilization, but entirely, probably globally, for, you know, human rights advancement and civil rights advancement. And again, this has been led by Donald Trump. You know, it's this is all relative. This is just merely a continuation. The problem is that, you know, it allows the codification and it gives the license. As we've discovered now with what's going on with the Kavanaugh situation. Trump made a series of extremely unfortunate comments at a rally a couple days ago where he attacked Dr. Ford. And this is the same kind of prevailing attitude that we see coming from the seventh floor of the State Department from Secretary Pompeo, who at the end of the day was a Tea Party Republican radical from Kansas, and certainly no friend of the LGBTQI community whatsoever. So this is everything runs in series of parallels here. You know, everything is interconnected. I've said this many times before on this very program, that when you look at this small select group of people, I think the best historic analogy I can give you is that it is repeating the history of the conquistadors when they came to the New World and they wiped out the aboriginals. They wiped out aboriginal beliefs. There was actual cases that could be made for genocide. And then, of course, that later morphed itself into policies that were enacted even by the United States. And there is a very root-based cause for this. And that root-based cause is the weaponization of religious beliefs against other human beings. And it translates into control, power. It translates into, we have ours, but we don't want you to have yours, and you're different than us, so we don't want you around. And unfortunately, what this eventually does, in a historical context and perspective, is that it's like a pressure cooker, Rob, only there's no relief valve. And eventually, right, if there's no relief valve, that pressure cooker is going to go off.
Well, I would underscore that. I wanted to go in a slightly different direction, underscoring what you're saying, though, is that, in fact, there's an article out, and I'm forgetting which publication it is right now, about our culture and how the exact thing that Trump did, which was just disgusting. I mean, it was tacky and disgusting and disrespectful. And this article basically called us, that we are coming to the age of nastiness. And, you know, that is what he's inspiring. And that is what his trickle down is, to your point, to the State Department. But also, I'd say that is a direct influence on the behavior of Lindsey Graham of late. because it, it seems extremely clear that Mr. Graham is pulling up his knickers and bending over for this boss that he wants to have, because he's got his eye on that as being the next attorney general. And he knows that if he goes out there and is this hysterical jerk and spewing all sorts of nonsense and insults and being just rude and obnoxious, that that is going to get kudos from the obnoxious one in chief. And that is the tone and the inspiration that is being sent down through that part of the population, whether they're part of the religious right or not. And many of them are not. They are just simply arrogant. When I was young, very young, I lived in Italy. And when we moved over there, two observations. One, Americans in general were held with a certain amount of disdain, because Americans always came across as, quote unquote, the big bad American, because Americans would go over there and expect all other cultures to bend to them, to serve them the way that they were accustomed to being served in America, and everything done to their satisfaction and to their standards, including being spoken to in English and everything else that comes to it. Now, the one thing that the Italians at the time did hold in high regard, however, because it only a few years earlier, John F. Kennedy and Jacqueline Onassis Kennedy, she was Jackie Kennedy at the time, did a tour of Italy, and they were gracious and dignified, and everything that we would want to present. And they made such an impact on the Italian population that that was all they could talk about, is, you know, the grace of John F. Kennedy. You know, and we've gone with Trump to that ugly American to the top. And that is what we are. We're pissing on the whole world and, you know, not caring, as long as we get it done our way and the way we've always done it, and, you know, and just pure, outright arrogance. That is the name of the game right now.
Well, one of the things that, and you mentioned this, and I will bring up something that New York blogger and my friend Joe Jervis ran on his Joe My God blog. There was a viral video that has been floating around the internet the last couple of days, and this occurred in Rifle, Colorado, which is kind of a reddish zone in the state, if you will. And this white woman unloaded on two Spanish-speaking shoppers, and I mean, we're talking really seriously ugly. But because of some peculiarities in Colorado law, they were actually able to arrest her for harassment based on the fact that she was being extremely racist. But see, here's the thing, to your point, and this is something that I have noticed. Trump has made it okay for this kind of nonsense. You know, everybody says, oh, well, there's just isolated examples. I'm sorry. If this is isolated examples, then there's a whole boatload of isolated since that guy took office, because I see ones like, you know, what Joe put on his website with alarming frequency. You know, I remember distinctly, and this was before Trump was elected. This was during the Obama administration. I was in Washington. That's, you know, where I was stationed for LGBTQ Nation at the time and for Reuters. And there was a McDonald's over by the press club on F Street near 15th, right off the mall. And I, you know, sometimes would go in to grab a quick bite. And the entire staff was Latino. Great staff, love them to pieces. And I speak Spanish, so I would go in and I would order in Spanish and joke around with the folks in the line. And this was a little routine we had. This one particular day during the summer, when Washington is just buried under tourists, for lack of a better description, some Trump supporter types were in line behind me. and I'm kidding around with the young lady behind the counter in Spanish, and the gentleman behind me starts in with, hey, you're in America, speak American. And, you know, yelling at me and her, right? And I whirled around and I said, first of all, American is not a language, at least not as far as I know. Second of all, okay, before you start screaming at people, I think you need to check your ignorance, okay? And then, of course, the gay part of me took over. And I said, and third of all, how could you possibly yell at anybody dressed in those horribly tacky, loud shorts, your knobby white knees showing, your red face, okay, and a belly that looks like it's going to cross the Potomac into Arlington, Virginia? Now, needless to say, I annoyed him a little bit, but the rest of the customers line thought that was pretty funny, you know. But at the end of the day, here we are, you know, that happened 3 years ago easily because I departed from Washington 3 years ago. So, yeah, we're talking 3 years or more. And this is, these are the same people, Rob.
No, yes, yeah, and to your point, I mean, and this was after Trump had been elected, so part of his inspiration on the 4th of July that a Latino family playing a whole bunch of music, some of which was Latin-sounding music, got a knock on their door from somebody walking in and telling them that was inappropriate music to play on the 4th of July. It's like, this is insane. It's like this concept of freedom is totally gone and being trampled by the concept of supremacy arrogance. I mean, it is just ridiculous.
It's very, well, it is, and it's nationalistic. This is not patriotism by any stretch of the imagination. This is authoritarian throwback to fascism. It mirrors and echoes the 1930s, which is kind of a tragedy, but this is what you're seeing. Which now brings us to what I've been putting up for the last week and a half, Kavanaugh. Okay, so the FBI
Let's get to that
report. All right, so the FBI completes this report, and my phone lights up at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning with a tweet from the damn White House because, they've gotten the report, and it's on its way to Capitol Hill. I don't know why it was so necessary to wake those of us up at 4 o'clock in the morning to let us know, but that's how the day got started. So the report went to the Hill. The Republicans have more or less said, this is great. No cooperation. She's a liar. Blah, 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 blah. The Democrats are like, this is a sham. In fact, Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia actually called it a sham. Lindsey Graham, who you mentioned earlier, got into it with a lady protester in the Senate, in the basement of one of the Senate office buildings. And he angrily said, well, maybe we should see if, you know, Judge Kavanaugh floats after we, you know, throw him in the pond, which, of course, is a direct reference to the Salem witch trials and the rather barbaric practice of seeing the witches float, which obviously, you know. So this is kind of part and parcel of, you know, how the day went. All right, so how bad was the anger? We're talking several thousand people in front of the Supreme Court on Capitol Hill. There were over 300 arrests in the atrium of the Senate Park office building, which is a rather huge space. The Capitol Police were busy. United States Senators, Republican, I should add, not Democrats, Republicans, were walking around all day with bodyguards. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the report. We don't know what's in it. From what I've been told by my Capitol Hill sources, we'll never know what was in it. I did have a chance to briefly speak with Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon. The senator told me that he felt that the entire report was a sham, that the FBI, because of the constraints put on it from the White House, were unable to run a proper investigation. The word that the senator used was it was strangled. And then he put a tweet out not long after he spoke to me. I'll read the senator's tweet. I read the FBI report. This whole thing is a sham. This stunted, strangled investigation was designed to provide cover, not to provide the truth. Now, I'd also like to make a note that the Senate Majority Leader, yesterday, before the report was even issued, scheduled to vote for Friday, tomorrow morning, and again for Saturday. The Republicans had no intention of honoring anything that came out of that report. This, to quote Senator Kaine and Senator Merkley, this is a sham. There's no ifs, ands, buts about it. The legal team for Dr. Ford, Katz, Marshall, and Banks, actually sent a letter to the director of the FBI, Christopher Wray, and they just eviscerated the entire process. Mind you, the entire process was strangled at the direction of the President of the United States. This is the White House.
Right.
Okay.
Brody, let me ask you.
Go ahead.
And you may not know the answer to this, but we know she wasn't interviewed for this. I don't think he was interviewed for this. Who the hell did they interview?
Well, that's just it. We know that they interviewed 10 people, 9 definitely. We know that the two principals, Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford, were not interviewed. There was a statement that was made by an FBI official that the testimony of Dr. Ford at the Senate hearing was sufficient, which some people actually found a little bit odd. I did, too. I wasn't sure whether or not the Bureau was getting coverage for that or not. These were people that were including 3 of the people that Dr. Ford named in her testimony that were in the room or at that particular party. And then the others were all one was the young lady from who was a classmate of the judges at Yale that made the accusation. And I think the other 2 were also from Yale. So these are all people that were more or less directly involved with that. So that's kind of who the Bureau was talking about. But, you know, there's been significant fallout on this. A press colleague from the Palm Beach Post, Lulu Margarin, Ramadan, wrote this. Retired U.S. Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, and this is a liberal justice, but he's also a lifelong Republican, told a crowd at a function in Boca Raton, Florida, which is where he lives, that Judge Kavanaugh's performance at the confirmation hearings should disqualify him. And then, quoting Justice Stevens, senators should be paying attention to this. Now, that's kind of significant because Justice Stevens had actually supported Kavanaugh previous to the hearing. And I think once the hearing had happened, then people were going, well, now just wait a minute here. This is not what we were expecting. Some of the other things that I was hearing today from the Hill, from not only Senate sources, but sources over on the House side, one of the things that was a real sticking point during the course of Judge Kavanaugh's testimony was the attacking of the Democrats, his temperament, his pestiness, okay, which it was. And I think that's probably what retired Justice Stevens was alluding to. Do you really want someone with that kind of a personality on the court? I mean, you know, this was, you know, an angry iguana with a bad case of hemorrhoids, you know, going after the Democrats on the panel, you know.
And it should be pointed out that Judge Kavanaugh, in a, you know, not very satisfying way, but still put out what could be seen as a little bit of an apology and definitely trying to walk back that attitude in the Wall Street Journal today.
Well, and also keep in mind, too, that the Wall Street Journal is owned by the Murdoch News Corp, which means it's basically a sister company to Fox News. So I have a little bit of an issue with credibility factor there. If he'd gone to the New York Times or the Washington Post, I probably would have been a little bit more inclined to believe him and say, okay, this has got some credibility, but he ran to a publication that has definite right, you know, leanings. It's owned by Murdoch. So I'm like, no, I don't buy that.
I don't think it matters which publication it was in, because it still would have been his words just being presented. I mean, it was his piece. And I'm not bringing that up to say that's a reality. I mean, it's somebody actually, I saw one meme on about Kavanaugh that I think sort of says it for me, is that, you know, if he has trouble, or has no trouble lying about, you know, his behavior in the past and, you know, can flip flop on, you know, his attitude in Congress and then write an article saying, you know, no, I'm actually this, then any assurances on Roe versus Wade, forget it.
Well, that's just it. I think that's also a sticking point. Now, that brings me to a couple of other points when we start racking up the vote for tomorrow for cloture and then, of course, for the vote on Saturday. Democrat Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota announced today that she's a definite no. Now, who do we have in the column of undecided? Talking to my colleagues at NBC News earlier this evening, at this point, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Joe Manchin of West Virginia are the two undecided definitely. Statements from both Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona and Susan Collins of Maine more or less would lead us to believe that they will vote for confirmation. So it's taken it down from four uncertainties to basically only two. So this vote is going to hinge on a Democrat and on a Republican. Now, there was a meeting that was going to occur, a Hill source told me, this evening between Senator Flake and Senator Coons, a Democrat from Delaware. As you know, Chris Coons was the one that actually talked to Flake when they were able to come to the deal last week to get the investigative process done, and it was because of the deal struck between Coons and Flake that forced Grassley to do this. However, in this particular instance, I don't know whether or not, and Flake is leaving the Senate. I mean, this is it. He's a lame duck senator. So it's a, you know, is he going to have the political courage to stand up? That's a big question. There was a highly publicized incident that took place last Friday between a woman and Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, just outside the elevator. Apparently confronting U.S. senators at the elevators has become a new blood sport on Capitol Hill. But anyway, this woman confronted the senator, and he basically patronized her. Okay, that's the only way of putting it nicely. When the Republicans came in for their press conference this afternoon, and I'm going to point this out because this has to be said, okay, with the exception of Senator Lee, okay, from Utah, you know, every one of those people standing up there is an old, tired, white man, okay?
Right.
Right there. Every single damn one of them, including Lee, are uber rich. Now, granted, the United States Senate has always traditionally been people who are just a little, you know, better off, okay? But it's gotten to the point now where these people are beyond better off. And they strictly do cater to their own class set. That means people like you, me, Dr. Ford, they get lost along the way. And this is really
not only part
of the problem.
Yeah, not only people like you, me, and Dr. Ford, but there was an interesting article out today also about the American public and how the press is saying, you know, on their support of Kavanaugh and not, you know, it's like, it, you know, this percentage, you know, for, you know, it's like the a slight majority are against or for Ford or for, you know, sympathetic to Dr. Ford, and, you know, mm-hmm. but up in the high 40s percentage are pro-Kavanaugh. And this article pointed out is that those are the numbers for the white people. If you look at the minority vote, the minority population, it is not even close. For example, African-American women, 80-some percent are against Kavanaugh, are pro Dr. Ford and, you know, And, You know, so it's, I mean, it's very much to your point. The demographics are very much in play on this. And, you know, the question is going to be whether people in these groups get mobilized in a month from now and show up at the polls.
Yeah, that's really, I think at the end of the day, Rob, this is exactly what the argument has got to be made. The kids from Parkland, Florida have been making this on their issue, but they've broadened it out, of course, obviously into a wider issue and with good reason. A lot of the activists have been saying the same thing. Even those of us who are journalists have been saying the same thing. The American people are going to need to have the initiative and take it if they want their government to change. It's not going to happen any other way.
Right. And potentially, and this may be Pollyanna on my part, that could actually be happening right now, because a lot of the information that comes in on the projections on the election are based on algorithms and statistics and history of who's voted before. And the thing that mm-hmm. can throw that all to hell is huge numbers of people who have never voted before showing up, because they would not be part of these polling calculations. You know, and that's what Trump counted on in his election, because he pulled people, albeit they weren't the people we wanted showing up, but he did, to the polls. And now it should be the time for the other people who were disenfranchised before showing up and doing what is right.
Well, this is also extremely generational, and we've seen this. If the supporters of Trump are any indication, then you're looking at the only ones that are going to be capable of pulling this one out are going to be the young people, the independent voters, and I think most importantly, the women voters. And I think that this whole situation with Dr. Ford and with the Me Too movement and some of the other things that have occurred have really galvanized that base. We were looking at the numbers today. Now, here's a political reality. Okay, as much as I hate this, this is political reality. Brett Kavanaugh is going to be a sitting Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court as of the final confirmation vote Saturday. That train record,
right,
not going to get stopped. At the end of the day,
right,
I honestly don't think that Lisa Murkowski is going to vote against the party. Okay, so that doesn't mean that you can't get rid of him. In the history of your republic, there has been one other Associate Justice of the High Court that was, in fact, impeached. Of course, it was during the Adams administration in the early days of the Republic, Justice Chase, but, you know.
Thanks, Brody. talk about dangling a carrot and then, you know, pulling it away. Yeah. In the first four presidents of the United States, yay.
Right. Well, that was the first time an associate justice was ever impeached.
How did they do it?
Well, there was a severe disagreement between them. Actually, it was President Jefferson. It was then President Jefferson and the justice. And it was in the early days of the formation of the Supreme Court and Congress and the executive branch, where they were really, quite frankly, feeling their way through the Constitution and trying to establish their government. This is different. This goes obviously way beyond that. The political differences between Justice Chase, President Jefferson, and that time period don't even mirror this. The only point I'm making is, though, that a justice can be impeached, and this is something that needs to be paid attention to. Yeah, some of the polling folks and I have been looking at the numbers. There's a very real possibility, based on what we're seeing, that the Senate could be taken back, too. The House is definitely going to go blue. It's, at this stage, even gerrymandered seats that were once considered safe no longer are. We were looking, for example, at a race in California, two of them in the 25th Congressional District and in the 50th Congressional District. The 25th, of course, is the Los Angeles area. The 50th is San Diego, and that's the seat that's currently held by Representative Duncan Hunter, who, as you know, has been indicted for campaign finance, you know, fraud. Now, his challenger and he are only 8 points apart in the latest polling. But see, here's the thing. That 8 points is extremely flexible, and by the time you factor in the margin of error, now you're only talking 3 points. Okay, Hunter has said some unfortunate things. He backs Trump, and the women voters don't like that. He's supporting Kavanaugh's nomination. So you start doing the pile-on. Hunter could find himself getting bounced out of office and being replaced by a Democrat. That's just one example, and that's in California. By the way, in right. California, there are 8 Republican congressional seats right now that are in the same boat. Now, you translate that into numbers across the United States, guess what? The House goes blue, but it's the Senate.
Right.
Why do I say that? The Senate is what is the mechanism to completely put the brakes on the Trump administration. I honestly, truly not, I believe this. I don't think that Leader Pelosi, when she becomes Speaker again, and the Democratic leadership, including Chuck Schumer, have the stomach to take the country through an impeachment process. So I think Trump is going to cruise his way to 2020, and the Democrats, in the meantime, are going to take the last 2 years, get a candidate out there, and then beat the pants off of the Republicans. The Kavanaugh
situation. Politically, I don't think they even want to do it because they don't want Pence, you know. I mean, you know, they, you know, Pence could show up as, you know, Trump impeached, Trump's out, Pence shows up, knight in shining armor for the Republicans without all the Trump baggage and all set for 2020.
Well, it goes deeper than that. If you'll remember, Trump made a speech in front of the United Nations last week, and he literally got laughed at.
Right.
Every single member of the Democratic caucus on both sides of the Hill and both houses was paying attention to that. And the light bulb went on. We can throttle this guy. We can keep him from doing any more damage. But in order to do that, they have to take both houses.
Like I said,
the numbers are looking like the House will go blue. Senate is up for grabs, okay? And that's what's going to be important. And as I started to say, this Kavanaugh situation is going to be what galvanizes the Senate vote. And it's not going to be the Republicans. It's going to be angry women who have been betrayed by the white male again, just like the thousands of them that were in front of the Supreme Court and on the Hill today and all over the United States. Women in general in this country right now are pissed as hell. Well, at least the ones that are independent and Democrats or progressive, liberal, Green Party, whatever. The Republican women,
right.
I'm not so sure. But they're mad.
Okay.
And they're mad enough
right.
to go to the ballot box and vote.
Good. And with that, Brody, and we're going to make that the last word because we are out of time. So I want to thank our listeners for listening tonight. I want to thank you for your expertise, your insight, and all that you do. It's phenomenal, and I'm not just talking about this program, but across the board from your journalistic input to the American press. I thanked our listeners. I'm used to having guests, so I'm used to thanking our guests too. for our listeners, please listen to us again next week, same bat channel, same bat time. We will be here for you. Also listen to Out in Santa Cruz on www.kfco.com. That is Saturday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We will have a rousing discussion there about similar topics as well as entertainment and other cultural phenomena. And with that, I want to thank you and bid you a very charming and happy good night.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.